We are in the business of running people for public office in order to change public policy to do nothing more or less than set the world free in our lifetime.
The greatest nation in mankind's history is on a suicide mission. And we can try to save it. We can try to increase the liberty movement. We can try to bring more people on board.
You get people to take baby steps towards you. You don't get them to eat the whole elephant all at once. That's not how politics works.
They say I have some purity test. I think the libertarian nominee should be a libertarian.
Tonight's resolution reads, the Libertarian Party should never again put up national candidates whose views are similar to those of Gary Johnson and Bill Weld. Arguing for the affirmative, Dave Smith. Dave, please come to the stage. Arguing for the negative. Nick Sarwark. Nick, please come to the stage. Jane, please close the voting.
What's going on, guys? How is everybody? All right. Thank you guys very much. That great job, Rob Bernstein. That was incredible. I've never seen him be funny in front of people before, so that was unbelievable. Also, he's fired if anyone wants to be my new co-host. No jokes about me. All right, so, in all seriousness, it is an honor to be here tonight. I love the Soho Forum. It's an honor to step into the ring, and it's genuinely a privilege to be on stage with somebody who I have so much respect for, who I've learned so much from, and it's also cool that Nick Sarwark is here. Come on. That's it. I'm done. All right, I'll start off with one, and now I'll move on. I actually am very thankful that Nick is here. I think this is a very important topic that gets right at the core of what we are all doing here. Like, what are we doing as libertarians? What is our reason for being, and what is the plan here? And this is a very serious topic to me. I became a libertarian about 11 years ago. I was a child of the Ron Paul movement. And like many people here, when I was introduced to these ideas, they changed my life. I immediately, when like so many of you, when these ideas click with you, I was like, I'm going to be a soldier in the liberty movement for the rest of my life. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what I will continue to do. That's what I care about. You know, I heard Nick recently, I was watching a video of his when he was doing a debate for the LP chairmanship, and he said, as the chair of the LP, the party is paramount. I don't look at things that way. I will tell you right now, I don't care about the Libertarian Party. I don't care about it at all. I don't care how many votes they get. I don't care how much fundraising they get. I definitely don't care if Nick's able to work out a $75 an hour deal from them, okay? That doesn't mean anything to me. I'm just saying what I care about. What's paramount to me is liberty. I care about the liberty movement. I care about the philosophy of libertarianism, the most beautiful, brilliant political philosophy ever devised by man. I care about the actually seeing liberty in real people's lives. Now, just to be clear, I don't have to go off on this to you people, but the philosophy of libertarianism is the philosophy of peace. It's the philosophy of prosperity. And as I've come more and more to realize, it's the philosophy of civilization. I mean, what better describes civilized behavior than the non-aggression principle and respect for private property rights? It's what you would teach your three-year-old as they go into the world. Don't hit other people and don't take their stuff. Yeah. And, you know, we have to, and this is why when you get to the debate resolution, the question is what we should do. And that really gets to the core of what you believe and what you think we're trying to do here. Look, we need to recognize the moment that we are living in right now, okay? This country is on a goddamn suicide mission. I'm not being hyperbolic. We're on a fucking suicide mission right now. $20+ trillion in debt, not to mention the unfunded liabilities and the public sector union, you know, pensions, which make that look like nothing.
A warfare state that can't find a conflict it doesn't want to get bogged down in. We've got an economy that's regulated every nook and cranny, a prison industrial complex, and a police state that would make Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin impressed. I know there's some of you guys who think I'm like a little bit too radical. Tell me what I'm wrong. What am I wrong about in what I just said? You think that Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler wouldn't look at what we have and go, God damn, they gave the Department of Education a SWAT team. These bastards are good. Okay? That is the moment we are living in right now. All right? And we, libertarians, have the philosophy that has the answers for pretty much every one of these problems. I mean, I'm not saying we can solve everything, but we pretty much know what to do with all of this stuff. Okay. So what do we want to do? You want to take a shot? You want to try to actually do something that might make a difference in this situation? Or do you want to sit around? You know, I watch these left libertarians debating age of consent laws. I watch the chairman of the LP using these despicable social justice warrior tactics against the people who spread liberty the most. And it's like, what do you guys want to do here? The nation, the greatest nation in mankind's history, is on a suicide mission. And we can try to save it. We can try to increase the liberty movement. We can try to bring more people on board. What do you want to do? You know, I was listening to the Reason podcast in preparation for this debate. I was listening to the Reason podcast, and they had Bill Weld on at Freedom Fest last year. I made it through the whole thing. And by the way, I love Nick and Matt. I love both of those guys. But there was one point where they're talking to Bill Weld, and they have this false dynamic where they go, you know, there's a lot of these like anarchists out there who want a candidate who can change 1 million people's minds. And then there's like the pragmatic candidate like Bill Weld who's trying to get 70 million votes. That's pragmatic. The idea that Bill Weld will get 70 million votes. I mean, are you kidding me right now? And then Nick Gillespie, who I love, but he says, you know, there are these anarchists who their whole thing is they want to die on the hill of we need to privatize the sidewalks. Look, man, that's not the hill I'm trying to die on. The hill I'm trying to die on is we need to end the wars and end the Fed. And that's what our candidate should be saying. And I will gladly die on that hill. Now, look, there's no conflict between should we win 70 million votes or should we try to convert another million people. We will never win 70 million votes unless we convert another million people, and then another million people after that, and another million people after that. That's our only choice. The only question that matters to libertarians as far as national candidates goes is who can convert more people? That's it. If we get votes without converting anyone, then what have we won? Nothing. Okay, so what are we doing here? Do you want to convert more people? Well, I don't know. You're a libertarian and you want to convert more people. Gee, I wonder what we should look to. When was the last time anyone converted a lot of people to libertarianism? And we all know the answer. I don't care what you think of him. It was the great Ron Paul. He was the guy who converted people. Every one of you knows this. You don't have to love Ron Paul, you don't have to agree with him on everything, but he converted people to this movement in a way that no one else in my lifetime has. So why don't we try to learn from that? What did he do? He was courageous. He was principled. He stood up in 2007 in George W. Bush's Republican Party and said the bravest thing you could possibly say. Do you guys remember the George W. Bush administration? Oh, the terrorists are wrong and the troops are the good guys. He went, not so much. Actually, the troops are kind of the bad guys in this fight. And the terrorists are kind of acting the way any of us would if someone did that to them. Now, that was courage. That converted me. It converted a lot of you. Ron Paul, there's a quote from Ron Paul when they asked Ron Paul what his campaign was about. He said, I would sum up my foreign policy as the following. I don't want to run the world. I don't know how to run the world. The Constitution doesn't give me the authority to run the world. We ought to mind our own business. And I would sum up my domestic policy as the following. I don't want to run your life. I don't know how to run your life. The Constitution doesn't give me the authority to run your life. We ought to respect individual liberty in this country. That was Ron Paul's message. Now, to be fair, Gary Johnson, I saw him on TV just a few months ago, and he said, and I quote, "I think the system could be tweaked to make it more fair." That's what we're going with. You know, something you have to understand about the moment we live in right now, and libertarians, if we do not if we don't grapple with this, we do this at our own cost. There is an insurrection going on against the center. That's what's happening in politics right now. It's been building for years. Do you guys know that movie, Loose Change? The documentary that said that the government was, the 9/11 was an inside job? But I don't agree with that movie. That's not the point I'm making. But it was viewed like over 100 million times. The idea that the government was responsible for 9/11 was something a lot of people in this country were willing to accept, at least be intrigued by. Then Barack Hussein Obama got elected. Barack Hussein Obama ran against Hillary Clinton and John McCain, the two most centrist candidates you could imagine, and he won. Then you had the Tea Party movement, the Occupy movement, the Ron Paul campaign of 2008, the Ron Paul campaign of 2012, the Bernie Sanders campaign of 2016, and oh yeah, Donald Trump's the president. I don't know if you notice what's going on right now, but there is a war on the center. There's a revulsion against the center. And by the way, that's a good thing. You know, so often, libertarians, we criticize the populist left, the AOC, the populist right, the Steve Bannon. But the message of CNN is basically, I don't think we need to go as far as AOC. We definitely don't want to go with Bannon. Let's just meet in the middle with Hillary Clinton and Lindsey Graham. The blood-soaked monsters who put us on this path to national suicide. You know, we may have our problems with populism. I certainly do. I've spent a lot of time on my podcast disagreeing with it. But can you relate to it a little? Can any libertarian honestly say, I don't know why you'd have a problem with the elites? They've only mismanaged everything for the last 100 years. So obviously the role of libertarians, it's so clear. The message that we do is, no. This is what the Libertarian Party in 2016 goes, I know you guys are anti-establishment, you hate the center. We're the ones who really hate the center. We've been talking about this forever. We don't need to go populist left or populist right. We don't need to embrace neo-Marxism or neo-fascism, these disastrous movements from the 20th century. Turns out the answer is pretty much our Bill of Rights, our story, our history. Embrace freedom. That's the answer. And what did the Libertarian Party do? They had this huge opportunity, the biggest opportunity for liberty we could have possibly imagined. We would have killed, in the Ron Paul days, we would have killed for an hour CNN town hall. They were pretending that guy didn't exist. And what did we do when we got the message? Well, we're a couple of Republican governors who were elected in blue states, fiscal conservatives and socially liberal. Basically, they said, come back to the center. That's what they said. The worst message you could have possibly had. Now, let me just quickly, because I'm going to go too long here. The views that Gary Johnson and Bill Weld had. Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, by the way. That's what the resolution states. So let me make this point. I'm not going to point out, I may say some views of theirs that I don't like. Maybe Nick comes up and says some views of theirs that he thinks are good. Look, let me put it this way. Let's say I found you a candidate for the Libertarian Party. I said he's, he supports free trade, he's for lowering tax rates, and he was for gay marriage way back in 2004. You guys like him as a candidate for the LP? Okay, your candidate's Dick Cheney. You think that's a good candidate for the LP? Or would you go, well, no, because he instituted torture, so that's disqualifying. It doesn't matter how good you were on three other issues, which he wasn't even that good, but whatever. It doesn't matter. So what I'm going to point to right now are disqualifying views that Gary Johnson and Bill Weld had. And despite what Nick's going to say, this campaign was a failure. It was a failure. The Libertarian Party has less members. If I get less than 5 times the amount of members the LP has on one podcast, I start rethinking what I'm doing with my career, okay? That's the goddamn truth. It's a fact. Here are the views. Gary, and I'll get into more of them later because I'm already running long. Okay, Gary Johnson's view that is disqualifying. His view was that Bill Weld should be his VP. Disqualifying. Okay? And by the way, he said they were going to govern as a partnership. This was their pitch. They were going to govern as a partnership with one staff. So we were putting Bill Weld as the nominee for the Libertarian. You know, a lot of people accuse me who don't agree with me on this topic. And I would just ask some of you guys. They say I have some purity test. I think the Libertarian nominee should be a Libertarian. That's my purity test. I don't think they should be a war hawk. By the way, Bill Weld was a fucking lobbyist for Raytheon. Didn't you guys know that? Yeah, Bill Weld, a lobbyist for a weapons company. Is that? Yeah, I know, it's a purity test. I don't think we should put that guy up. The guy who vouched for Hillary Clinton. Vouched for Bill Weld. By the way, I'm a professional stand-up comedian. Bill Weld said, I vouch that Hillary Clinton is an honest person. Funnier than anything I've put out there. Never once. That's what Bill Weld said. This is a guy who supported not only the Fed, but the dual mandate, supported the war in Iraq. In 2016, he endorsed Kasich. That was who he was. By the way, Nick was like, oh, well, you know, I think Bill Weld coming over to the Libertarian Party didn't make the Libertarian Party any more establishment. It made Bill Weld more libertarian. Nothing could be further from the truth. It made the Libertarian Party more establishment because they nominated Bill Weld. And did it make Bill Weld more libertarian? He bailed as soon as he was done using you guys. He made fools of you guys. Okay, listen. And I'm going to end this on a quote from somebody who will say this better than I ever could. And then I'll wrap up very quickly. And that is the quote from the great, heroic, and courageous Tom Woods. We libertarians are the inheritors of an exceptionally venerable tradition of ideas that is noble and beautiful. And that carries with it a grave responsibility. We must be true to that inheritance. Enough putting people to sleep already. It's time we finally woke them up. Thank you.
Nick Sawick, you get an extra half minute. So 15 and a half minutes, Nick.
Thank you to Gene, thank you to Dave, thank you to Soho Forum, thank you to all of you for coming out here. I want to start out by saying I recognize that I am pushing a rock uphill. I did enough trials to understand when I'm being hometowned, and Dave spent a lot more time in this room than I have, and that's okay. Where I'm a little confused is we had a proposition. I'm pretty sure it was that we shouldn't nominate anyone with views like Gary Johnson or Bill Weld again. And the only disqualifying views I heard from the affirmative were that Gary Johnson wanted Bill Weld to be the VP, Bill Weld thought Hillary Clinton was an honest person, and Bill Weld used to be a lobbyist for Raytheon. So perhaps during the rebuttal time, Mr. Smith will continue with more views that he thinks are disqualifying and put some meat on the proposition. Be that as it may, there are some things that he said about how the ideas clicked with him during the Ron Paul campaign. And I lived through that too. I actually voted for Ron Paul in a Maryland primary where it really doesn't matter. Because I was excited about what he had the opportunity to do. As many of you know, Ron Paul was our candidate in 1988. And I find that a lot of people in the Libertarian Party are people who've had that epiphany. Something has clicked for you. Some problem that the government has done has rubbed you the wrong way to the point where the scales came off your eyes and you realize that the government controls us in so many ways, not just the one that is the problem. You start to see the world in a different way from everybody else. It makes you special. It makes you libertarian. It makes you rare. There aren't a lot of us. As Dave so aptly points out, the Libertarian Party's paid membership is plus or minus 15,000 people that pay dues. The number of partisan registered libertarians in the United States and states that have registration by party is roughly 600,000 in a country of a few hundred million. not everybody thinks like us. And so the question comes, as a political party, as the only piece of the liberty movement that goes out into the arena and actually gets our hands dirty on the debate stage, that fights with establishment politicians, that puts our ideas out there, what is the best strategy for us? Because we are not in the educating business. We are not in the think tank business. We are not in the business of creating a different culture. We are not, just while we're going through businesses, in the podcasting business. Although I hear some people are, and it's apparently very lucrative. We are in the business of running people for public office in order to change public policy to do nothing more or less than set the world free in our lifetime. And that game is different from every other game and has to be played according to the rules of that game because they keep score different there. Now, Dave talks about how he would rather change 1 million minds than win 70 million votes. That's a great plan. That's a good idea. But it came right after Dave said he doesn't really care about the Libertarian Party because Dave doesn't care about politics. And a lot of libertarians don't care about politics. But politics is what the party does. And I want to go over some stats for you because they're important. Because facts matter and facts don't care about Dave's feelings. The fact is, the Libertarian Party has tried what Dave thinks. I think Dave would agree with me that Ron Paul would be the ideal Libertarian presidential candidate, wouldn't you, Dave? Ron Paul was the Libertarian presidential candidate in the year 1988. And Ron Paul, in 1988, raised $2 million, which is quite a bit in 1988. And he got 430,000 votes for president, 0.5% of the popular vote. By contrast, Gary Johnson, in 2012, when he didn't have Bill Weld, got 1.3 million votes, hit 1% for the first time since Ed Clark in 1980, and he raised $2.5 million. So a similar amount in nominal dollars to Ron Paul in 1988, a significantly smaller amount in real dollars because of the Fed and inflation, and he got more than basically twice as many votes. So just on the facts, we know the difference between running Gary Johnson and running Ron Paul, and it's roughly two times as good of a result. Now, if you don't care about the votes, that's fine. You don't care about the votes. But then I ask, what is the proposition? We're talking about what a political party should do. And what do political parties do? They run candidates and they get votes. In 2016, where the only change to the ticket is a different vice presidential nominee, it's still Gary Johnson at the top, but it's Bill Weld at the bottom. Gary Johnson got 4.5 million votes, 3.3% of the general election popular vote, covered the spread between the winner and the loser for the first time in Libertarian Party history. And they did that raising $12 million, a nearly fivefold increase from the last election before Bill Weld was on the ticket. Now, I don't think it's a good thing to be a lobbyist for Raytheon. It's not work I would take, although I'm an attorney and I've represented some people that probably you guys wouldn't like. So I have a little bit different perspective on it. I want to talk about one of the views that he did actually discuss. And I want to start by saying there are many different kinds of libertarians in the world. There are libertarians that prioritize property rights, money, foreign intervention, the drug war, criminal justice reform, gay rights. There's a ton of different kinds of libertarians. In fact, if you have three libertarians in a room, the only thing they'll agree with you is that there's only one libertarian in the room and it's them. That's just the nature. We're a fractious people, but we're good people. In our party's history, we've actually done the studies. We've looked at, where do people come from? How do you get to the Libertarian Party? Like, there's no one path. There's no wrong way to eat a Reese's, right? As long as you get there, it's okay. Roughly a third of people who are part of the Libertarian Party were formerly Republicans or conservatives. They come from that place. They realize that Republicans aren't really conservative and never are going to be, and that Republicans actually hate libertarians. And they decide, you know, why give up all the pretending, just be a libertarian. Roughly a third are former Democrats or progressives. They realize that the Democratic Party doesn't really care about equality and human rights, that in fact what they care about is it's just a different set of lobbyists that they would like to give favors to. And they're like, why to bother pretending? The party apparatus is just going to make Hillary Clinton the nominee anyway. I might as well become a libertarian. And roughly a third come from having never been anything or been independent or just don't like politics generally. And we seem like the most apolitical political party. We are the 7-Up of political parties. We are the Uncola. And so they come to us because they're like, this is as close as I can get as an anarchist or an independent to saying, you know, when you ask me who do I want to vote for, my answer is this. That's my answer. These are people who, by voting for them, I get to say that to people in a way that they can understand. Because, as somebody once told me, some politicians are dumb, some politicians are corrupt, but every single one of them knows how to count. And they can count all the votes that they get, they can count all the votes that they didn't get, and they know exactly how many votes the libertarians got. That is the strongest message people can send in a voting booth. Because it says, you told me that this person's the devil or this person's the devil, and I denied your entire frame. I voted for what I wanted instead of what you wanted me to be afraid of. I'm stronger than you. I'm more principled than you. I know what I want, and God damn it, I'm going to get it. That's why the Libertarian Party exists. And the number of votes we get determines the amplitude of that message. If you want to send a message to whoever wins the presidency, you better well get a ton of votes, because that's what scares them. Do you think that the president let John Bolton go because he wanted to? No, he hired the guy. He's dumb like that. He let him go because it was finally unpopular enough for him to have him there. That's libertarians that push that way. It's libertarians that push against the Jeff Sessions of the world. It's libertarians who want something different. But you have to have the numbers to make the persuasive argument, because they aren't able to be rationally dealt with. Politicians are not necessarily the most moral people in the world. And so you have to help them feel the heat, because they may not be able to see the light. Now, I want to talk specifically about the interview with Rachel Maddow that Dave talks about, in which Bill Weld vouched for the character of the woman that he worked with when he was counsel for the Senate. Remember how I said a third of libertarians come from the left, and a third come from the right, and a third come from the middle? So if you go through a room of libertarians and you ask them, gun to your head, who would you rather win the 2016 election? A third of them are going to say Hillary Clinton. A third of them are going to say Donald Trump. And a third of them are going to give the right answer, which Gary Johnson gave, pull the trigger. It's not a good idea to express your preferences when you're a candidate, because a third of the party is going to be mad at you for that. And apparently a third of the party still is mad at him for that 3 years later after he lost. I mean, what more punishment do you want for Bill Weld other than the fact that his strategy didn't work? But pushing aside from that, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be a libertarian. There are really great libertarians like Walter Block, who decided that somehow it was more libertarian to support Donald Trump than it was to support Gary Johnson. I disagree with that, but I'm not going to say Walter Block's not a libertarian. Murray Rothbard thought it would be libertarian to support Richard Nixon. I'm a little bit more touchy about that, but, you know, Murray Rothbard's dead and can't defend himself, so I'm going to say he's still a libertarian. Libertarians make bad choices. The libertarian platform has a lot of planks in it. There's roughly 30-some planks in the libertarian platform, and every presidential candidate, no matter what, is going to deviate from some of those planks. And until or unless the Libertarian Party says these planks are more important than those planks, those are personal opinions that every party member has. Every one of us came to this for our own reasons. Some of us, it's guns. Some of us, like Rob, it's drugs. Some of it's war. Some of it's the Fed. If your issue is the one that the candidate doesn't agree on, you're going to think that person's not a libertarian. But if the issue the candidate doesn't agree on is one that you don't care about, you're going to be like, yeah, he's libertarian. He's just not libertarian on everything. Who cares? Right? It's all about your perspective. There's no accounting for taste. And part of the thing about having a political party is political parties are made up of the people who show up. A political party is not a fixed thing. It is not static. As you know, people have pointed out to me, and apparently there's some caucus within the party that's really aggressively trying to work on this. If you can get enough people to go to the convention, you can change the entire direction of a party. I was expecting more of a clap for that. Come on, guys. Believe in yourselves. So what that means is if you throw rocks from the sidelines but you never get involved, you're probably going to get ignored. The funny thing is people tell me all the time, you shouldn't have nominated Gary Johnson. You shouldn't have nominated Bill Weld. I don't get to nominate anybody. I've got one delegate vote at convention. One. And I don't usually tell people who I vote for. It's not worth it. There are over 1,000 people who come from libertarian parties around the country who've been party members for decades who come to convention and they work very hard to try and pick the candidate who has the best balance of being a pure libertarian message and having a high enough profile to get that message out to people. And that balancing act is so important because we have two back-to-back candidates that show what happens when you get out of balance. In 2004, Michael Badnarik was the nominee. Probably the hardest core, purest libertarian you have ever seen who has ever been at the top of our ticket, including Ron Paul. Michael Badnarik didn't have a driver's license. That's how intense this guy was. And he got 0.3% of the vote. And right after that, the pendulum shifted the other way, and we got a former congressman, Bob Barr, who was not very pure in his libertarian messaging, definitely had a driver's license, and he got like 0.4% of the vote. Going either side doesn't work. The last thing I want to tell you about is, this is the important part. The Johnson got 4.5 million votes, right? There are roughly 600,000 registered libertarians, partisan registered libertarians. That means that at a minimum, even if every registered libertarian voted, 87% of Johnson's voters were not libertarian yet. Those are the people that we talk to when we run for office. And if we don't talk to those people in language they can understand and get those votes, we don't get ballot access for every other libertarian candidate all around the country who runs for state and local office so that we can continue to do this work and eventually set the world free in our lifetime.
Thank you. Five minutes of rebuttal for you, Dave.
All right. I don't know where to start. Okay. The idea that Ron Paul in 1988 didn't get as many votes as Gary Johnson did today. Yes, he also didn't inherit the Ron Paul movement from 2008 and 2012. He also wasn't running against the two most hated candidates in the history of the world. By the way, Ross Perot got like close to 20 million votes running against the charismatic Bill Clinton and the war hero George H.W. Bush. But you're so quick to accept this as a victory because Gary Johnson got some votes. You know, you said something at the end there that really is the most important point, and you take it in the exact wrong direction. Did you know 87% of the people who voted for Gary Johnson aren't even libertarians? Yeah, and they're still not. That's the whole point. That's why the votes don't mean anything. Listen, so we got more votes. So this is your point. We got more votes. Look, Gary Johnson got more votes than Ron Paul did in 2012. Let me ask you something, every one of you. Do you think the Liberty Movement is doing better in 2019 than it was in 2013? Do you really?
Are you out of your freaking minds if you think it's doing better today? Go to a YouTube video in 2013 and look at the comments. We owned them. Right now, libertarianism is considered a joke. And it's because it kind of is. Because we put a candidate up, Gary Johnson, who did ridiculous stuff. Couldn't remember names and places. And the whole thing was just absurd. Now, look, I don't know what else to rebut. If you're going to say that I didn't give enough views, I'm sorry. I thought for a room full of libertarians, being pro-war and pro-Fed was enough to be disqualifying. If you'd like me to continue, I mean, we could do another hour of views that were disqualifying. And the point I was making with Bill Weld saying it's not that he preferred Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. That's not the point at all. Let me be very precise about this. It's why he preferred Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. Bill Weld said when the Libertarian Party got what all of us Ron Paul supporters would have dreamed of getting, an hour on CNN, and they asked him what he thinks about Hillary Clinton, he said, "We disagree on some economic issues, but she's a good person." That's what he said. Now, forget good person, you know, whatever. I mean, sure, she's a good person who happened to be friends with, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, the child pedophile. And sure, her husband's a sexual predator. And sure, her best friend's husband's also a sexual predator. But I'm sure she's like a great person who just happens to hang out with a lot of pedophiles. Anyway, forget that. Libertarians, what's our problem with Hillary Clinton? If you don't lead with Libya, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, millions of corpses, millions of dead people, trillions wasted, destroyed nations. That's our problem. He said his problem, we disagree on some economic issues. By the way, Bill Weld also said of the Bush-Cheney administration, they're doing a great job globally, but I disagree on their social issues. And he said on that Rachel Maddow show that you're talking about, and this is 2016 candidate Trump, he said, Donald Trump, I'm not going to act like these two are equal. Donald Trump's foreign policy puts him in a class all by himself of danger. Donald Trump saying we should end these wars. Now, of course, Donald Trump right now should be impeached and tried for war crimes for what he's doing in Yemen. But that's not what he ran on. What he ran on was ending this stuff, and that's what Bill Weld objected to. It's not that you chose Hillary Clinton. It's why you chose her. That's the whole point of this, okay? And if the Libertarian Party doesn't want to be the anti-war party, please just disband already. Who cares? We've killed millions of people. We are competing with Hitler in the number of deaths we have right now. It's borderline genocide, what we've done to the Middle East. If you're not against that, after the millions dead, the trillions wasted, nations destroyed, what is the point of you? Now, by the way, like I said, I'm a soldier in the liberty movement. I'm happy to support the Libertarian Party if it's actually supporting the liberty movement. Then fine. I'm down to... Look, Michael Heiss and the Mises Caucus guys, he came out, he said... Look, all he said was, I'm a soldier in this liberty movement. I want to reignite the Ron Paul revolution. We're starting this thing. Tom Woods is on board. And I went, I'm in. That's all it took. I'm in. I'm a soldier. I'm ready for anybody to lead. But you have to be anti-war, anti-Fed. Those are my only qualifiers. Whoever you're looking at today, if Justin Amash comes over, if he's the guy, if he wants to run an anti-war, anti-Fed campaign, I'll get on board with that one. That's all I care about. In this moment of populist uprising, has there ever been a better time to be anti-Fed, to insert that into the conversation than now? Gary Johnson said he rejects the dual mandate and they should only have the monetary policy. Bill Weld supported the dual mandate. That is disqualifying. Thanks.
Five minutes for Nick. 5 and 15 seconds,
Nick. I got to give Dave props. Everybody knows you go a little over when you do debate. Let's just start from the back end. You know, the dual mandate, the full employment, low inflation, dual mandate of the Federal Reserve. Do I prefer somebody who's anti-Fed? Sure. Does anybody outside the Libertarian Party or the Liberty Movement give a shit? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They don't care. And this is what it comes down to. And this is really, I think, the heart of the premise. I think this is the actual proposition that was unstated, perhaps, is... what do you want the Libertarian Party to do? Do you want us to go out and convince people to join the club, to become part of the movement, to wake up, to pull the scales off their eyes, to decide that they really believe in freedom for everything all the time? Or do you want to go out and win votes? Because if you want to go out and win votes, you have to win them from people who are not libertarians. Again, roughly 600,000 out of a country of 300 and some million identify as libertarians. But 10 times as many voted for the libertarian presidential candidate. Ask yourself, why is that? It's not because they said nice things about Hillary Clinton. It's not because they supported the dual mandate. It's not because of anything, bake the cake, Aleppo, whatever it is. It's not because of any of the things that tick off libertarians about what they did. It's because for people who don't have the scales off their eyes, for people who think when you tell them, I want you to live free, that they're already free. Go walk down the street here in New York. Say, hey, I just want you to live free. Everybody here seems to be doing pretty good. Everybody seems to like it. They all think they're free because they haven't run into the place where government hurts them to the point that it wakes them up. They haven't had the Ron Paul moment. So the question is, do you not go for their votes until they've woken up? Or do you get them to vote for a libertarian and maybe vote for a libertarian a second time? I guarantee you a lot of the 2016 Gary Johnson voters, and the reason that he did better the second time was there were people who already voted for him, already liked him from 2012, or liked him from when he was governor of New Mexico. You get people to take baby steps towards you. You don't get them to eat the whole elephant all at once. That's not how politics works. This waking people up is a thing to be done one-on-one by all of you. When you talk to your friends and coworkers, you wake them up to these ideas. You get them to be as indignant as you are about the fact that anybody would support the Federal Reserve. But that's not the entry point for most people. For most people, it's the fact that the government has $22 trillion in debt, which, by the way, if you visit 22trillion.org, the Libertarian Party is the only political party actually talking about this issue right now. They care about the fact that the government is bankrupting their children and their grandchildren. They care about the fact that the government is going to send their kids overseas to die in foreign wars. And the Johnson-Weld ticket was anti-war. They were anti-war. They were hella more anti-war than any of their opponents. No matter what your problems were with Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, I guarantee you there was no other option on your ballot that had so many libertarian positions in one spot. Maybe they had two or three that you didn't like. Maybe they were ones that were really important to you and it's offensive. Maybe you hate Hillary Clinton, which was such a deep and abiding passion that once somebody says that she's a good person, you just can't hear them anymore. That's fine. That's your own thing. You can work that out yourself. But a lot of people don't feel that way. They want somebody that talks the issues that they care about. Most people in this country don't care about politics. All these political commenters talking about like what's happening in the Democratic primary race, none of this matters for at least another few months. Nobody's paying attention. They're paying attention to, you know, football just started. They're paying attention to their kids going back to school. They don't care about this stuff. So you have to talk to them about things that they have a problem with, not the things you have a problem with. It's a better way to go through life if you want to be successful in sales or politics or relationships. You have two ears and you have one mouth. Listen to what concerns people and speak to their issues. Don't go off on what's most important to you. Because remember, we are the vanguard. We are the Navy SEALs of the Liberty Movement. We are the special ones. We think differently. We're the dreamers. We're the mad ones. You're special. You're different. I'm glad to be in the movement with all of you. But remember, not everybody's awake yet. And sometimes the way to get there is to go gently and talk to people where they're at and get them to move just one or two steps closer to you. And that's how we eventually win.
Thanks, guys. We go to the Q&A portion of the program as... You know Dave, but you perhaps don't quite know Nick. At this point, you can ask each other a question at any time. You can do that now, or you can wait for other questions. The moderator has the prerogative to ask one of you a question. I also want to mention that we do have seats down here, so anybody who's standing can walk down the aisle to the front row and take a seat. I want to start out with moderator's prerogative and ask you this question, Nick. Ron Paul was a more strident, more forthright, more vociferous proponent of ending the Fed, ending the wars, than Gary Johnson was or Bill Weld was. I imagine you agree with that. Would you prefer, if that were the choice, between a Gary Johnson or Bill Weld-like candidate for the next presidential election or a Ron Paul, strident, principled, anti-Fed candidate, which one would you prefer for the next nominee?
My preference is going to be for a candidate who is going to speak in bold tones about the issues that are not being addressed by the two old party nominees. Every presidential election has to do with looking at the field that you're, you know, Dave brought this up. Two really unpopular candidates, both one of whom is a reality TV star and the other one has never had any executive experience. That's part of the reason why running two chief executives made sense for that cycle. So I think a strident anti-war candidate who also was for free trade and open immigration and ending the national debt or actually like ratcheting it back, those are four issues that neither the Republican or Democratic nominee is going to touch. And that gives you a clear lane to be a real option, right? They don't have a second best option anymore. If you're a hardcore anti-war voter, there is nothing for you outside the Libertarian Party. I mean, allegedly the Green Party still exists, but I'm not sure. That's the lane we should be in. So I do think that we should be bold about those things. I think we should be a perfect candidate might be one that's boldly anti-war. Anti-war on drugs, anti-war overseas. Just be against all war. Lee Wrights, who sought the nomination in 2012 against Gary Johnson, his whole campaign slogan was, "I am not at war," either at home or overseas. It was strident. It was passionate. He was a passionate man. He sadly passed away. The delegates didn't choose him. They went for somebody who was able to reach more people with a softer message. And that's really the delegates' choice. They get to decide how to balance that.
You want to comment on that, Dave? You want to go to the audience question?
I mean, the question is whether you would prefer if Ron Paul had run on the LP ticket in 2016. I mean, I don't know. I think you'd have to be brain dead to not say yes. I don't know. Would you have rather had the country doctor who knew more about monetary policy and military history than anybody else in the room, who inspired millions of people to join the Liberty Movement? Yeah, I think I would have rather had that guy. And the idea that you go, oh, well, if you're an anti-war voter, there was nowhere else to go except the LP. I mean, okay, yeah, you're right. That's how George W. Bush won. That's how Barack Obama won. That's how Donald Trump won. The truth is, if you were an anti-war voter, there was nowhere to go, period. And look at Tulsi Gabbard right now. She was the most Googled candidate after both of those debates, and she sucks on every issue except war. And she's getting some traction off of that. Obviously, the Libertarian candidate should be the home for the anti-war vote. And if you're not doing that, like I said before, what's the point?
Okay. No questions do you want to put to each other at this moment. So we're going to go to the audience. Please phrase your question.
Wait. Okay. We can put questions
anytime
to each other?
Anytime you want.
Okay. All right. I'll put a question to Nick. So do you think, let me ask you this, if you could run a candidate, let's say you could run Dick Cheney on the LP and get 10 million votes, would that be a good move? Like my question is, if you could run somebody who has no, you know, they want to lower taxes, they want to do a couple things here, but you know, they're a war criminal and they're for torture and all these other things, but you'd get 10 million votes out of it, would that be a good idea?
Me personally? Because I don't pick the nominee. That's
yeah,
the weird part about this debate.
But we're debating about what they... That's the debate that we're on. Comedians don't pick the nominee either. I'm asking you your opinion on who the nominee should be, which is what this whole thing is about.
No, I think it's a bad bargain. I think Bob Barr was a bad bargain. I think that taking somebody who has too many bad views because they have a higher profile, that there's a point where you get diminishing returns, right? Like, you have to balance it. If you don't balance it, so, I consider Dick Cheney to be unbalanced in many ways.
But is it that he's unbalanced, or is your point that there are certain views that are disqualifying? That if you had this view, that's too much. It doesn't matter how what you think on other things. If you're for torture and wars, then it doesn't matter how many votes we get. Is that fair to say?
No, I just...
He's just unbalanced? So why not go Dick Cheney for 10 million votes?
Because I don't think 10 million votes is worth it.
Yeah, I don't think four is.
So
let me ask one more question real quick. Okay. Do you think there's any issues that you, any positions you could have as an LP nominee that would be disqualifying? That would be so unlibertarian that you would go, you should not, we, no matter how many votes you would get, we don't support you being the nominee.
I'm sure there are.
What would they be?
It's up to the delegates.
No, for you, dude. We're debating. For you. What do you think for the nominee? By the way, thank you. Stop being a lawyer. This is a good tactic. It's like the same thing when you say, you know, the Mises Institute aren't fascist, but they're the favorite institute of fascists. This is good lawyer tactics, but it's really cowardly for an intellectual conversation. So what do you think? This is what we're debating. What issues would be disqualifying to be the nominee for the LP?
I think being pro-war is disqualifying.
So Bill Weld is disqualifying?
No. Bill Weld's not pro-war.
Okay.
Since Dave wants to ask questions, I want to ask one too.
Please.
Who should we nominate, Dave?
It depends on who's running, I suppose.
Who should we nominate in 2020, Dave?
Right now,
Stop being a lawyer, Dave.
I've never been a lawyer in my life, so that's not a problem. We should nominate, as I said before, anybody who's willing to run an anti-war, anti-Fed campaign. If you were asking me of the last time, or are you asking me?
No, I'm asking you in 2020. Who should we nominate? Because you took the proposition that we should never nominate anyone with views like Weld or Johnson.
That's right.
So who and what views should the nominee have?
They should. I've said this over and over. I will continue to say this. At a bare minimum, they need to be anti-war, anti-Fed. I'll look at who's running right now. Who are the candidates who have declared for 2020?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I thought you were the chair of the party.
I thought you were a member. Are you not paying attention to the race? You have strong feelings about who we should nominate.
Excuse me, sir. I am a dues-paying member, and from what I understand... From what I've been told, you're the least important member of the party. So I will say, listen, whoever is better. Look, I'm not saying any of them are perfect. Austin Peterson would have been better than Gary Johnson. McAfee would have been better than Gary Johnson. Better than Bill Weld, for sure. Adam Kokesh is better than Bill Weld, for sure. Listen, like I said, guys, this isn't a joke. You know, I know some of you guys, I know there are people there that are like, I'm too radical. You are radical, too. If you're a libertarian, you're living under the biggest state in the history of the world, and you're anti-state, you're a radical, too. We need to actually take a shot at doing something here. So I would take anybody who is that. I would take Justin Amash if he ran an anti-war, anti-Fed campaign, like I said before.
Good answer. Question. Please phrase your question as a question.
Yeah, there's a question for Dave. So in 2016, which of the four principal candidates did you support or vote for?
Are you asking me, what was the question? In 2016, who did I vote for?
Yeah.
I didn't vote.
Yeah.
If you listen, I'm not just going to go out and vote for something where you have one whatever of 100 millionth chance of influencing someone. You got to win my vote. I'm not going to vote for somebody. Bill Weld was disqualifying for me, like I said, so I didn't vote for them.
So you got Trump.
Huh?
So you got Trump.
So did you. Okay. Yes, I got Trump. We all got Trump. Vote didn't change it any more than me not voting. Are you suggesting we wouldn't have had Trump if I had voted for Johnson Weld? Did you think I was going to make the difference?
Do you want to comment, Nick? Do you want to comment on the question or go to the next question? You'll pass.
No, I think it's pretty clear who I voted for, because I voted.
Next question.
So, Dave, you talked about the outside attacking the middle. And we just saw, I think, one of the most successful attacks by the outside of the middle orchestrated by Steve Bannon, right? Mm-hmm. He put his ideas in the Oval Office. They run this country. in a lot of ways. So my question is, you also seem to not like that as a strategy. You want to make the million new libertarians versus have a, you know, a Rand Paul as the Rand Paul administration. Is that actually less attractive to you than a million new libertarians?
Look, first off, I would reject the premise that Steve Bannon got his views in. What happened was Steve Bannon got a candidate to run on his views. He got in, and the war party took over, and Steve Bannon was out a few weeks later. So the idea that Steve Bannon's views are in there is, I think, completely inaccurate. We haven't pulled out of one war. They haven't done, I mean, anyway. If you're saying, would I rather convert a million people or actually get someone in there who can kind of shrink the size of government, you know, that's an interesting question. Like, if, let's say Gary Johnson had won and he was in there and he shrunk the government by 20%. And then the debate was, would you rather convert another million libertarians or get an actual, but he didn't win. He didn't do anything. Nothing's been, what has been done with all the Cato Institute, Libertarian Party money they've raised? Nothing. What in the federal budget has been reduced? What's been abolished? Nothing. So we just lose either way. Let's convert a million people.
Comment, Nick?
I just noted that Dave didn't answer the question.
What? I'm sorry. What did I not answer?
The question was, would you rather convert a million people or elect somebody like a Rand Paul who is a moderate libertarian?
Rand Paul, if I could elect, listen, if there was,
I think Rand Paul was the example he used.
Yes, if Rand Paul, and by the way, I was prepared to vote for Rand Paul mostly just because he's Ron's son, but he didn't make it till the New York primary because he tried to moderate and failed. And if he had run like his father, he would have still been around in the New York primary like Ron was, and I would have voted for him. So it's just a false choice. That's the point. So yeah, if Rand Paul, by the way, if someone like that was around, I might have actually voted for him. Because unlike Gary Johnson, unlike these other guys, Rand Paul actually knows his stuff. And I kind of believed he was, you know, deep down somewhat principled.
Next question.
Hi. Thanks for the debate, everyone. Nick, this is a question for you, actually, regarding you mentioned how there's different kinds of libertarians in the Libertarian Party. I wanted to get your perspective on the diversity. When I think of diversity in the Libertarian Party, I think of non-aggression principle, and I think of the fact that the Hoppe people get along with the Roderick Long people. They all get along with the Sam Konkin people. They all get along with Brian McClanahan and the Confederate people. What I don't think of is lukewarm Republicans who are frustrated and lukewarm Democrats who are frustrated, feeling welcome, whereas none of these very, very different other people, the Hoppes, the Longs, the Konkins, the wide spectrum of libertarians don't feel welcome anymore. Do you see your broad tent libertarianism catering more to pseudo-Republicans, pseudo-Democrats, or to the intellectual variety within the Libertarian Party?
I mean, I appreciate the spectrum of thought at the Mises Institute, but there is more than that. I'm dubious on Hoppe, but I'll give you Long, I'll give you Konkin, I'll give you Chartier, I'll give you Block, I'll give you Woods. Hoppe may be a bridge too far. You know, SEK3 didn't really get along with many people near the end. Here's the when I'm talking about the diversity within the libertarian, the different kinds of libertarians, the two rough groups that I see as party chair and talking to people at conventions are there are the property rights based libertarians, the idea that everything comes from property and everything is related to property. Propertarians, if you will. If you won't, I don't care. I will. Then there are the what I would call individual rights libertarians. This is probably most clearly in people's heads, reason libertarians. The idea that the most important thing is that humans are free to make as many peaceful choices as they possibly can in their lives. And they're not as focused on things like money and property and taxes and covenant communities and all that other stuff, right? They're different flavors of libertarian. Both sides are libertarian, but because you came at it from a different premise, you have different platform planks that are more important to you or less important to you. So the reason libertarians tend to get really exercised about things like open immigration and the war on drugs and overcriminalization and discrimination and systemic racism, because those are related to individuals having the ability to pursue happiness any way they choose. And the property libertarians are concerned about wars and money that funds wars, because it all comes back to property. It all comes back to taxation as theft, and the government shouldn't take my money to go do bad things to brown people overseas, right? They're both true, and that's the issue. That's the problem with dismissing, with coming up on this stage and saying, I would have voted for Rand Paul, but I didn't bother to vote for Gary Johnson when he was on my ballot. That is the problem. If we're gonna be part of a team, we all have to be on the team together. And if part of the team spends all of their time talking about how everyone else isn't really a team member, that's a problem.
Okay, so I'm not saying, listen, like I said, I'm a soldier in the liberty movement. I want more than anything to be part of a team. Look, like so many of you guys, I miss the Ron Paul days. I miss the days when we had a leader and I could just be like, yes, I'm behind you. But that whole mentality of I'm just part of a team is why there's Democrats and Republicans. I mean, is there any principle where there's a point where you'd go, no, I'm sorry, I can't be a part of that team. And now the idea that there are these some libertarians who believe in property rights and these other who are just kind of individual rights. Well, no, one of them have a solid philosophical framework and one of them don't. I mean, even when you just said that they go, well, some just believe that you should be able to do whatever you want to that makes you happy. Well, what if robbing someone else makes you happy?
As long as
that's
it's peaceful.
Not a libertarian.
Don't misstate my position. You don't need
to. I'm quoting what you just said.
No,
I'm
you're not.
Saying. Okay. Anyway, I don't know what to say. Hans Hermann Hoppe is a hero. Lou Rockwell's a hero. Have the courage to say it. Libertarian movement wouldn't exist without those guys. So long live both of them.
Next question.
First question is to the audience. Who here hosts a lucrative podcast? Because my wife and I host a podcast, and it's very lucrative at a grand total of $2.67 on YouTube. So, thank you.
I've been on that podcast. It's very good.
Wait, what's the name of your podcast?
What's Hoppening? Because we're half Asian. So, Anyway, to Nick, I wanted to know what you personally is your number one issue, not just what the party puts up, but what you personally. And I already know what Dave is going to answer, because he says anti-war all the time on his podcast. It's like 24/7. Yeah, and Yemen, yeah, Libya. It's like, we get it, you know. I'm kidding. I love your podcast. Anyway, so yeah, what's your number one issue, you personally?
My personal number one issue, and the thing that... Even when I was running a municipal race for mayor of Phoenix, almost everything comes back to the criminalization and the war on drugs. And part of it has to do with my lived experience, having been a public defender for 5 years, seeing how the system is built to incarcerate and destroy communities, seeing that every erosion of our privacy rights, of our liberty rights, of the right to search and seizure, every expansion of the police state, every cop who murders somebody all comes back to the war on drugs. So criminal justice reform and the war on drugs. Like, I mean, I will throw myself under the bus. If you had Dick Cheney and he ran only on the platform of legalize all the drugs and end the racist war on drugs across the country, I would vote for him at convention.
Whoa, hold on. Let me jump on that.
Please,
wow,
jump on it.
What a load of first world privilege you just threw at us. So you would take killing a million Iraqis if we could end the war on drugs here at home?
Do you have any evidence that they aren't going to kill a million Iraqis anyway? Because they have for the last four administrations.
Yeah, okay.
Every other politician that gets elected is going to go have that war.
Oh, so we should just accept that. Okay, so you're saying Dick Cheney, Mr. fucking carpet bomb the Middle East, Mr. Institute torture, you would take that because really it's just those poor Muslims over there. As long as we can end that. By the way, we're all against the war on drugs.
Are we?
But obvious. Yes.
Okay.
What are we? No, you're right. You got me. I'm really for the war on drugs, Nick. Oh, man. Good lawyering there. Okay, yes, we're all against the war on drugs, but the number one issue that everyone should be thinking about... Look, man, There is a genocide happening in Yemen right now. And I know I talk about it on my podcast all the time because it's a goddamn genocide. If you look at what we've done to Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, you know, five or six other countries, this is I mean, it's on the level of Hitler or Stalin. It's the most evil thing that's going on right now. And to say that you would take Dick Cheney, somebody who can't go to certain countries because they'll be tried for war crimes, that if there was any justice in the world, would be put on trial and executed after it, is just, that's crazy that the Libertarian chairman would say that.
And to say that you'll accept what we've done to Baltimore and New Orleans and Chicago.
No one said
New York
that.
And Washington, D.C., and that you wouldn't take the end of the incarceration of generations of African-American men because you think foreign policy is more important? Go ahead.
Wait a minute.
Go on.
But no one said that. I didn't say I would take a drug warrior if he would end the wars. I said I wouldn't take Dick Cheney to end the drug war. You guys were here for that part,
if
right?
If Dick Cheney would end the wars, would you allow him? Would you vote for him? If he said he was going to get us out of all of the overseas wars, even?
If Dick Cheney wasn't Dick Cheney, I might like him.
Well, he's not ending the war on drugs either, so I think we're both safe.
Next question.
This is going to be directed towards Nick. I believe it was in your opening, you said that the point of the Libertarian Party is not to promote one single issue. The point of the Libertarian Party is not to educate people to become libertarians. The point of the Libertarian Party is to win elections. Okay, but I don't agree it's to win elections. The point of the Libertarian Party is to bring about a libertarian future. So because of that, wouldn't you have to say that educating people and getting a million more activists that can bring about that libertarian future instead of just getting one candidate who can get 10 million votes one year, don't you think it's more important to educate them, educate these activists?
I'd like to answer in GIF form, if possible. Why not both? The goal of the Libertarian...
Man, I would tell Nick not to quit his day job if I didn't really, really, really want him to quit his day job.
The goal of the Libertarian Party, as stated in the mission statement, is to move public policy in a libertarian direction by running candidates for office. Running candidates for office and getting them elected is only one piece of the puzzle. There are two issues that in the last 50 years the Libertarian Party has been in front of and gotten effectively passed in these United States. Marriage equality and cannabis legalization. We're the only party that's been for it. We've been for it for decades, and it's the law of the land, and we did it without having a single federal office holder. Because what happens is if you keep running candidates who refuse to shut up about the important issues that move us to a freer society, you force the old party politicians to co-opt them. All of a sudden in 2013, 2014, the Democrats all sort of got religion. They're like, oh, yeah, we totally supported marriage equality the whole time. Don't worry about it. Like, yeah, sure. I mean, maybe you saw me on TV when I was running, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both, talking about marriage being between a man and a woman, but I've changed. They didn't change because they wanted to. They changed because we've been pushing that window. So you're right. It's not just about getting people elected. But if you don't go out and rack up the score, they don't take you seriously. That's the point. That's how we move the ball down the field. We refuse to shut up about these issues. We force them to take our positions or start losing elections. That's the only language politicians speak. And if we don't use that weapon at our disposal, we are doing a disservice to our movement.
All right. I think what's doing a disservice to our movement is to pretend that our movement achieved marijuana decriminalization and gay marriage. That was the left. They won just like they've won everything else in this country. And to pretend that we did that. Oh, that's right. California legalized pot because they're so libertarian out in California. That's where they... Listen, we may have been on the right side of that issue before the left came and changed the country, but that was the left, man. And no one in the real world is going to believe you that the Libertarian Party is the reason why any of that happened. Listen, the left has won at just about everything. To pretend that... it's a disservice to our movement to pretend we're not losing. Look at the federal spending every year. Look at the, I mean, come on, man. Like, we're losing everything. No one has bought into the principle of small government. The Republicans used to talk about it and not believe in it, and now they just stop talking about it. We are losing, and let's get real.
Just as a factual correction, because they still don't care about Dave's feelings, the Libertarian Party of Colorado, of which I was vice chair in 2012, when we were the first state in the country to re-legalize cannabis, was the only political party in the state of Colorado that backed Amendment 64, which got more votes than the sitting president in Colorado. So it may be true for California, it may be true for other places, but for Colorado, we were at the forefront of it. We were the ones in the trenches fighting, and we did get it done.
Okay, I'm not saying that the Libertarian Party didn't support the right position. I'm saying it wasn't you who got it done. And you can keep borrowing Ben Shapiro's fucking stupid line. Could you stop borrowing his foreign policy also?
Next question.
Hi, this question is directed at Nick. You made the argument that that it would be difficult to gain more followers or gain more libertarian members because people feel free, and if you walk out and you ask people if they feel free, they'll say yes. I just wanted to ask, like, do you think about, like, the people that support the Black Lives Matter movement? Do you think they would answer that? Do you think the people that think that Trump is literally Hitler would say that they feel free right now? Or how about the people in the middle of America who see all these politicians saying that they want to take away their guns? Like, do you think that they're free and, like, we're not going to be able to convince them that they have an issue with freedom?
No, I think those are the three groups. And just to pick three groups, those are the groups that we can reach. This is basic sales stuff, right? This goes across relationships, sales, everything, but politics too. You can't get somebody to buy something you're selling until they're convinced that they have a problem. If they're happy with where they are, if they don't have any pain, you can't fix the pain. So yes, the Black Lives Matter people, we did a lot of outreach to the Occupy people when that was a big thing. Libertarian Party members went to go speak to the Tea Party protests. We're currently ramping up some gun rights stuff because the NRA is busy exploding itself with corruption. We are hitting those issues. Where we see people who have woken up to the fact that there is an area of their life where the government is hurting them, is taking away their freedom, and it's important to them, the way this works is we go to that person and say, you know what? We agree with you. The racist cops are killing too many black people. This is a problem. We want to work together to solve this problem. And by the way, you might want to check out the rest of the Libertarian Party platform while you're here. And some of them will...
Yeah, it's what we do is we go and make the point that takes absolutely no courage to make at this point, more or less. That's what this idea that, look, first off, you know, it's really something for me to get lectured on how we expand the liberty movement, how we convince people, exactly how we go and approach them. By saying, you're the chair of the LP. I'm some comic. I've converted way more people to the liberty movement than you have. I have, literally, I mean, I'm not saying I'm like the end all be all or anything like that, but I have way more of an audience. Way more people know who I am. Like, again, I know I'm coming off a little bit hostile in this debate, and part of this is because I'm very passionate and I'm an asshole, and part of this is because he's like insulted some people who I really love and like basically implied that they were like Nazis and fascists, and I'm the Jewish grandson of a Holocaust survivor, so when people imply somebody's a fascist or a Nazi for political gain, it really pisses me off. So I'm sorry, because I'm kind of coming off like a dick here. But to be talked to, here's how you convince people, okay? You believe in something. Even when it takes you into unpopular opinions, you stick with it because you go, this is what I believe in. And when you're Gary Johnson and they go, I want to end the war on drugs. And someone goes, well, you want to legalize heroin? And he goes, no, not heroin. No one cares. Because when you go, but not freedom of association, because then people will be racist or whatever. Anyway, that's how you convert people. Believe in something.
Don't ever apologize for who you are, Dave. Don't ever apologize.
Next question.
Okay. I think you guys are both great. And I think you both have legitimate points of view that are not actually mutually exclusive. Yeah.
This will have to be the last question.
Okay, this is the last question. Yeah. Okay. You know, I support a lot of what the Libertarian Party stands for. But here's my question. How can the Libertarian Party call itself the party that's anti-war, both at home and abroad, when you guys as a party oppose any form of gun control? How many people need to die in a Walmart or a school before you guys change your minds?
Oh, lady?
Yeah.
Hold on. Listen, you know what? She had some courage in that one, so I'm not going to... All right. Listen, I will absolutely support all of us turning over all of our guns to the government as soon as we run a background check on the government and make sure that they're not a threat to kill people with those guns, okay? So I want to be very careful. You know, I believe in background checks. So as soon as I'm sure that they're not going to, you know, like, genocide 250 million people in the 20th century, we'll let the government have a monopoly on guns.
So if you'll indulge me, thank you for the question. I think this illustrates something. You asked a very sincere question about an issue that's very important to you, and you just got booed by a room full of libertarians. And did that make you feel good or not?
Well,
all of a sudden, feelings are very important now.
I want there to be less gun violence in this country. The problem with gun violence in this country comes back to the war on drugs. If drug dealers were like alcohol distributors and could go to court when they had disputes and didn't have to use violence, there would be less demand for guns. If we were in less wars overseas, there would be less soldiers coming back with PTSD. There would be less glorification of the military. There would be less violence in our society. The violence problem is not a gun problem, and the number of guns that are out there and most of the proposals would not work. So I agree with you that there's a problem, but I don't agree that the fact that we are hardcore against any gun control means that we don't, that we're not anti-war. We're anti-violence because we don't like the violence, but it's not the gun that does the violence.
Thank you. I just want to mention to the young lady that the SOA Forum did have a debate on guns, which introduced a lot of nuances and issues that haven't been raised even by our two articulate people on this stage. So you might want to check that out. Go into thesoaforum.org. I think it'd be a very interesting debate, which raises questions and issues that maybe you haven't quite anticipated. Thank you for the question. It was very bold. I don't really think anybody booed. I think they were just very impressed by your courage. They just said, ooh. No, that wasn't... There was no B. There was an ooh, not a B. Not a boo, but an ooh. We are now going to go to the final segment of the debate. Summary statements. Dave, you're up first.
All right. Well, you know, I don't really know exactly how to sum this up, and I don't want to just repeat myself from the beginning. Look, I know there's some of you who think that I'm too radical or you just don't like my style or whatever, and I get that. I'm not running to be a national candidate for the LP. I'm just talking to us frankly about where we are. You know, Nick can say this stuff about, you know, the way you convert people is, well, you have two ears and only one mouth. I don't even know what this means. Convert people by standing for something and believing in something. What Nick isn't addressing is that, like, they got all these votes for Gary Johnson. What does that do? This is what I was getting at when I asked him the question, would there be any issue that you would say is disqualifying? And then he falls back to this like, well, I don't pick the candidate, because he doesn't want to admit it, because then he knows he's giving up the argument. If you do acknowledge that there's some issues that are disqualifying, then obviously being pro-war and pro-Fed are those issues. That's it. I don't have some purity test. That's all I'm saying. We should at least be for that. So, okay, Gary Johnson got 4 million votes or whatever. They got 15,000 dues-paying members. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. They had double that when Harry Brown was the nominee. And what? They didn't have a lot of votes, but they had double that because they had a candidate who had some principles. That's all I'm arguing. Now, what's not been addressed throughout this whole debate is what I started with, which is the most important thing. Guys, we got to realize what situation we're in. I'm not being hyperbolic when I say this country's on a suicide mission. Do you guys not look around and see what's happening right now? The debt,
the wars, the regulation, the prison industrial complex, the militarization of the police. And now, after the state's been growing and growing and growing for my entire life in very dramatic ways, I mean, George W. Bush grew the state faster than any other president before him, and then Obama did more than him. And now we're living in this Trump, and you see the country tearing apart. Look, I talked about this on my comedy special. Have you ever heard of a country that was a republic that turned into an empire, that got way too expanded militarily, spent itself way too far into debt, then the culture started falling apart and everyone got divided and everything worked out okay? You ever heard of that before? You think I'm being hyperbolic when I say we're on a suicide mission right now? We have the answers and we have to actually go for it. This idea of like a couple of, well, it was a good time to elect a couple of governors because Hillary didn't have executive experience and Trump didn't have oh my God, talk about missing the point. It was the time to go for it. 2016, doesn't every libertarian wish we had a chance that we could actually have the world, like a stage where a lot of people were looking and explain to them what we are? And we had that. Now, the reason I care about this so much is that we're going to have it again in 2020 because Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. Sorry, it's not going to be your loyal Bill Weld who left you guys high and dry. It's going to be Donald Trump, and it's going to be some terrible Democrat, Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren or whoever. It's going to be a terrible Democrat versus Donald Trump, and once again, the Libertarian Party is going to be there. And I really think, man, we should try to nominate somebody who's anti-war, anti-Fed, will stand on principles, can actually get people up out of their feet, motivate people. Look, our only chance is to convert more people to libertarianism. Now, I know Nick will tell you this is how we convert people to it. I don't think he's right. How many people has Nick converted to libertarianism? I don't think that many. What Nick has done is really hurt the liberty movement. He has alienated Tom Woods, Ron Paul, the Mises Institute, the people who are the most effective at converting people, bringing them into the liberty movement. Why would you go? Why is it that if I bring up Bill Weld, he'll just dance around and say every nice thing you can say, but if Ron Paul comes up or Tom Woods comes up, he's talking about how they're like retweeting things that they're Russian spies or they're crypto fascists. This is insane. Like, what are we doing? I want there to be a liberty movement. I don't want us to be in this internal war. But we got to do it by being libertarians and letting the chips fall where they may. As the great Tom Woods said, enough putting people to sleep already. It's time to finally wake them up. Thank you, guys.
Most people in this country don't know who Dave Smith is. They don't know who Tom Woods is. They don't know what the Mises Institute is. Hell, they don't even know what the Cato Institute is. They don't know what Reason Magazine is. Whether you want to acknowledge it or not, whether or not you come in to this debate with a pre-selected set of notions and a you're gonna vote how you're gonna vote, no matter what. I want you to leave here understanding we are different and we often live in a bubble. We don't talk to people who are not like us, which is a natural human trait. We need to run candidates who can appeal to Americans, who can appeal to New Yorkers, who can appeal to Arizonans, who can appeal to your neighbors, your coworkers, your friends, the other people in your classes. And they have different needs and different desires than we do. There are different things that make them passionate than we have. Dave said something just now that doesn't make sense. He said, I don't have any purity tests. The candidate just has to be anti-war and anti-Fed. Those are purity tests. Those are litmus tests. Those are you saying that everything's important, but this is more important than everything else. And that's true for Dave. And for somebody whose brother is in prison for drugs, it's the drug war that's the one thing that the candidate can't do. And for someone who really loves guns, it's gun control is the one thing the candidate can't do. There are as many purity tests as there are libertarians, which is why it's not a dodge for me to say that the delegates choose the nominee. The party is made up of those who show up. It's made up of Libertarian Party members. And I would encourage every one of you, whether you like me, hate me, or have no particular opinion about me other than, you know, I have bad taste in ties or something, to join the Libertarian Party. Visit lp.org, join the party, stand up, be counted. Be part of that conversation. This is a conversation that we will have in Austin, Texas. Our party is the only political party in this country that still has a real nomination process. No one knows before the convention who the nominee is going to be. As opposed to my colleagues in the other parties, I don't put my thumb on the scale. I don't have any influence over who the nominee is. I don't do backroom deals. I don't pre-select people. I don't spike Bernie Sanders to elevate Hillary Clinton. The Libertarian Party is made up of you, if you want to be part of this. But it's time for people who have spent a long time throwing rocks from the sidelines and talking about what they want, but then not being bothered to even go out and vote for a Libertarian Party candidate, to join the party, get involved in the party at the local level, support a candidate, go to a fundraiser, give some money, work a poll, talk about a candidate, have them on your show. Do the things that you can do to advance the people who go out and run. The last thing I want to talk about, because I touched on it, but I didn't really sink it home. In December of 2016, the Libertarian Party had ballot access in 37 states. That is the highest number we have ever had. Gary Johnson did that for us. Gary Johnson did that for us. And what that means is every candidate up and down the ballot was able to run in those midterms elections in 2018. We were able to run hundreds instead of tens or 20s. This is a long-term movement. Our party is poised to be the first party in modern history to have back-to-back 50-state ballot access, and it's because of Gary Johnson. So while I didn't hear what views we ought to have or what views were so disqualifying, I do know that he did something for this party that nobody, including Ron Paul, has ever been able to do. And I appreciate that, and I don't know if he's right about everything. And there are a lot of mistakes that were made on that campaign. But those people did something that no one else has ever been able to do for the Libertarian Party. And I can't argue with those results. I can't throw rocks against people who are out in the arena, getting beaten up on TV all the time, going and spending the days and the time to fight for us. I will support them, and I hope that you will vote for the negative proposition. Thank you.
Well, thank you to you both for impassioned, articulate debating. Either of you, I think, could be a candidate on the Libertarian Party ticket. And you might each consider running and possibly together. But
can we
govern
as a partner?
Yes, as a part, possibly.
Cabin?
Yes. And I think we are all proud to have both of these guys feel so impassioned about issues that we care about. And with that said, however, we have opened the voting. Jane, you've opened the voting for the final vote. Again, the resolution reads, the Libertarian Party should never again put up national candidates whose views are similar to those of Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, yes, no, or undecided. While you're deliberating, I do want to announce what I know I told Nick and also that Dave is aware of. There will be an after-party fundraiser sponsored by Michael Heiss of the Mises Caucus after the debate. And that will be held at the loft apartment of me and my wife, Hisako. We've already sold tickets to it. If you want to buy a ticket, Michael Heiss is over there, the white. He'll give you the address, and he will sell you a ticket. Nick Sarwark, you are comped if you would like to come. And
we'll come.
So great. Great. And so come up to me. I'll give you the address. It's so we keep that a bit of a secret. In addition, we
you don't
want to
put it out on the YouTube?
Don't worry. In addition, please come again to the SOA Forum. If you look at our roster, we have 10 debates scheduled to the end of the year and through early next. Our next debate will be October 7th. Jacob Sullum will be debating drug use, which came up today. And Jacob Sullum will be defending a resolution about ending the war on drugs against New York Times reporter Alex Berenson. Dave, we hope you'll accept the demotion and come back and come back as our warm-up act. Next time?
I got a baby. I need that money.
Okay,
I'll be
yes,
here.
Okay. So Dave will be returning as warm-up act for the Monday, October 7th debate on drug use. On November 5th, Tuesday, November 5th, Richard Wolff, University of Professor Emeritus of Economics, will defend a resolution about socialism. And he will be debating me. The guest moderator will be Nick Gillespie. I do want to mention I debated Bhaskar Sankara. I was trying to get an older guy that time. I approached Vivek Chibber, who had been Bhaskar's debate mate.
Learn some economics, Bhaskar.
That's what I did. But Bhaskar is only 28, 29. I condescended to him a little bit, but now I am going to be debating the guy who has been called, Richard Wolff has been called the best socialist economist in the country. He's written, guys, come on, look.
I'm talking. Sorry. We're friends now.
Oh, you're friends, okay. Be friends afterwards at the party. In any case, I will finally have a guy in the room who's an emeritus professor who's written copiously on socialism, who takes a strong position on the subject, who is the expert in the country on socialism, unlike Bhaskar, who was a bit of an amateur. So this will be, I think, a very worthy debate between me and Professor Richard Wolff. I will also mention, oddly, that our sister debating society, Intelligence Squared, has decided to have Richard Wolff and Bhaskar debating in mid-November on the issue of capitalism, and I fear that that debate is once again going to be this kind of the skewed idea that capitalism will be on trial. Richard and Bhaskar will get a chance to compare capitalism with their vaguely formulated notions of utopia, and nobody will ever ask them what is socialism all about. My debate is going to be about socialism is preferable to capitalism, so Richard will have to define what he means by socialism. I have indeed read his copious work. I know what he means by socialism, and I can tell you what he means, which I will do during the debate. On Sunday, December 8th, we're going to have a matinee. That's going to be 3 p.m. on Sunday, our very first experiment in a matinee. Loyola University Professor of Economics Walter Block will defend his eviction. Sorry. His eviction theory of abortion. We are still going to invite Dave Smith as the warm-up act, even though Dave was going to be the guy who was going to debate Walter Block. But I decided not to have Dave do that. So he's going to be debating instead Kerry Baldwin of the Mere Liberty podcast, defending his theory of eviction with respect to abortion. Jane, I think we have the final vote, and I want to say that the Tootsie Roll will finally be distributed to whoever wins the debate. Okay, so we had 40% supporting the resolution initially that Dave was defending, and that rose to 60%, so Dave picked up 20 points. That's the number to beat. Nick, you did extremely well, except you picked up 16.8 points. You went up from 14 to 31, so you did quite well, but Dave gets the Tootsie Roll.